hello, Red Raiders, and thank you once again for tuning in to Riding Right with the Raiders. As always, God bless America and God bless Texas. I'm here with my host,
Caleb Jensen, and I'm accompanied by my host,
Kevin Allen. And today we have a special guest, Commissioner Corley of Lubbock County.
Thank you, guys. Thank you for having me on.
Yes, sir. We love getting to interact with our local elected officials. I think it's very important that Tech students, especially ones that are conservatives and Republicans, know who represents them and get to interact and hear from them and learn what it means to be conservative or Republican.
Yeah.
So, why don't you tell everyone a little bit about yourself and kind of how you got to where you are?
Gotcha. Yeah, my name is Jason Corley. I live out here in Slayton, Texas, born and raised in Lubbock County. My background was oil field. I worked in the oil field for over a decade before I ran for county commissioner. Before that, I went to school at West Texas A&M University, so go Buffaloes. And yeah, got in the oil field, married for 16 years now, two kids. I got an 18-year-old and a 12-year-old. Coach a lot of softball and baseball over the years. But yeah, just you know, fairly active member of my community. Wanted to make some changes, wanted to improve some things, and yeah, that's what led me to where I am today as a two-term county commissioner.
Before we kind of dive in here, I noticed you said you live out in Slayton. Mm-hmm. How does that work with being a Lubbock County commissioner?
So Slayton's actually inside of Lubbock County. I've got the so precinct 2 is going to be the southeast corner of the county. So, you know, my precinct starts at I-27 and just kind of windshield wipes around to the east up to about FM 40, you know, over there, Buffalo Lake, north of Buffalo Lake, Ransom Canyon, Roosevelt School District. But my actual northwest corner of my precinct is actually sliding 34th Street. So right across the street from Coronado ISD, Coronado High School.
Oh, wow, that's a lot more expansive than I realized it was.
Yeah, so Lubbock County is a little bit bigger than we realize. I actually represent 75,000 people.
Oh, wow. I didn't even know that.
Mm-hmm. That's yeah, crazy. So, I mean, we're growing like crazy. 2020 census put us at about, they said it was roughly 315,000. We know it was a bad census. Even the census people said so, you know, with COVID and everything going on. So Lubbock County is probably a lot closer to 350 at the time. You know, if you're asking me where we're at today, I say we're over 400,000.
I think I would probably agree with that because I live in Lubbock and sometimes I just drive around. And if you go into the Southwest and other areas, there's a lot of new neighborhoods out there.
Yep.
And a lot of those houses are full. So,
Yeah, drive around. You see those houses. Just figure on four people per household, you know, and it give you an idea of how fast this place is growing. It feels like they just fall from the sky because places that, you know, I'll drive through over around, say, Wolfirth, if I'm heading out that direction, you know, areas where I just remember being nothing but cotton fields and there's neighborhoods, you know, that I sit there thinking, you know, wait, a year or two ago, that wasn't there. But, yeah, we're just growing by leaps and bounds.
Yeah, you're right. And man, you know, I grew up working for, I don't know if you know who he was, but his name was Matt Adams, and he was a big peanut and cotton farmer in West Texas.
Oh, okay.
He passed away due to COVID, unfortunately, but he owned the Cotton Kings there for a while.
Oh, okay, yeah, gotcha.
You identify as a conservative and support conservative leadership here in Lubbock County, correct?
Mm-hmm. I do.
How do you define conservative leadership at the county level?
So at the county level, what does conservative leadership look like? Well, if you're asking me, it looks like no new revenue tax rates. The other thing that we've really got to do is, you know, people talk about, well, how do you get leaner? How do you spend less money? You become more efficient. You know, the number of people moving into Lubbock County is not going to go down. It's not going to decrease anytime soon. So how do you do more with less? Well, you know, you get efficient. And what that looks like is going to be embracing technology. You know, this has been a conversation that's come up for the last 2 years. You know, should Lubbock County, should we start experimenting with some electric vehicles, you know, like a Tesla or something like that? You know, we've got different departments that, you know, may use vehicles. and they don't drive the car more than, you know, 50 to 100 miles a day. And, you know, that kind of situation makes pretty good sense for electric cars for what we're looking at. So that's something we need to be looking at, too. Big topic of discussion has been, you know, AI, and what does that look like in, you know, in government? You know, where can we use that to, you know, one, decrease the number of staff or the number of staff necessary to get the job done? You know, two, what about forms and, you know, filling out paperwork? How do we allow, I'm trying to think of what else, online payments. That's another consideration, you know, to, you know, get government caught up, because government's typically about 10 years behind the curve on, you know, on the public sector, so, or excuse me, on the private sector. So, you know, that's where we need to be. I know, speaking from personal experience, Precinct 2, we've got a little clubhouse. When I first got in office in 2019, you know, the question I had was, wait a minute, I can book a cabin for a weekend in Colorado for my cell phone. Why do I have to drive out to Slayton and go to the clubhouse and meet the clubhouse manager there to book a clubhouse for a day? So, you know, had some government created hurdles we had to get over and get around on that. Lubbock County had never used PayPal before. That was kind of coming as a shock. What do you do with this? How does this fit into your recording? What does that need to look like? And, you know, added a credit card processor, found some software that worked pretty well for us. And, you know, moving forward, we just got that implemented in February. Kind of my gripe was, how long does this take? This project's moving at the speed of government. Here we are, 2025, and we're just now getting this thing going. So now you can book the clubhouse. So what does that mean at the end of the day when we're talking about efficiency? People that book the clubhouse typically pay about $250, and our rentals are up 25% just because we switched the new system. Now it's available. Now it's online. You know, people can get on there, take a look at the facility, take a digital tour, and they can also book it anytime they want. But, you know, that's just a small example of things that we need to be looking at for local government to say, how do we get more efficient, and what does that conservative government look like?
I think that's a very important thing to address and topic, because a lot of people, when you talk about conservatism, they don't like it when you talk about changing stuff, keeping up with technology. They think you're trying to, like, go completely green like Joe Biden wanted and others. And that's not the case. It's about using what you have, okay? Don't go beyond that, but utilize that and make it efficient. Work with what you have, and that's what we have now. That's what we have. As county commissioner, aside from no new tax revenue, and correct me if I say any of that wrong, what is another core value that guides your decisions as a commissioner?
Other things that I look at is just, you know, my background was in the oil field. So, you know, hurry up and get it done was kind of what I was used to. You know, how do we get, you know, I can tell you this much from being on the drilling side. The first job you had was figure out how to get it done. You know, if you had an oil company that's trying to drill a new field or a new formation or figure out a new fracking technique, it was figure out how to do it. Once you figured out how to do it, now you had to figure out how to do it more efficiently. That was, you know, that's something that's just always been, this was trained into me for a decade before I got into you know, being a county commissioner. So that's been a lot of my questions, like, okay, well, we already know how to do it. Now, how do we do it better? How do we do it more efficiently? The other thing too on that, you know, conservative doesn't necessarily mean the part being, if you say you're a conservative, you're a conservative Republican, that doesn't mean you're the party of no. You know, maybe it did years ago, you know, if you're back in the neocon generations where, you know, the Democrats spent all the money at the federal level and then the Republicans reeled it all back in. And you had to switch back and forth all the time. So when I say we don't have to be the party of no, I mean, we don't have to be the party of no innovation. You know, how do we do this thing, you know, better, faster, cheaper? How do we make the process more efficient? That was always kind of my question. Why do I have to drive down to the courthouse to pay a ticket? Why can't I pay this thing online? COVID kind of forced some things upon local government, which was a good thing. Your JP, so your Justice of the Peace, you know, if you got a little speeding ticket, something like that, they started having those little trials by phone or by Zoom or something like that. Started doing evictions through Zoom. That made a lot of sense. Now, from the standpoint of a penny-pinching county commissioner, why do I think that's important? Well, our air conditioners, when you start looking at air conditioning system size for commercial buildings, they're sized off the number of people that are going to come and go through the building throughout the day. If you can decrease the number of people that travel in and out of the building, it's going to cost you less to heat and cool the facility. So, yeah, during COVID, you know, during 2020, we had all the shutdowns. You know, Lubbock County, we never shut down, but we had significantly less people passing through the building. I mean, we saw a $200,000 savings on the electric bill. That was caused by just the lack of people in there. I mean, that was really just the air conditioning. alone that, you know, we saw those savings. So, you know, that was something that got my attention, got me thinking, going, okay, what else can we do? You know, I mean, obviously you don't want to, you know, we're not going to make the DA's office try to depose a witness, you know, on Zoom. That doesn't make much sense. But I mean, speeding tickets, misdemeanors, little simple stuff. Surely we can do it that way.
I've never heard that about the savings that went on during COVID, because all we ever hear about is it caused people to go out of business and people lost money.
And well, then don't worry. We turned around and blew every dime we saved on masks and, you know, putting up, I don't know, bug screens, more or less, the little screen doors on random doorways. It didn't make any sense. But yeah, that was probably the most, as far as silly seasons go, it was, I don't know. Embarrassing. That's why nobody in government wants to talk about it.
Has there ever been a time that you're comfortable sharing where you had to stand on your principles despite opposition in your capacity as commissioner?
Sure. Every commissioner's court. You know, I'm in precinct 2. You know, I mean, I have a lower income population over here. So, I mean, I've always been opposed to a tax increase just because my constituents, you know, a lot of us can't afford it. I mean, we're very blue collar in this area. So, you know, you keep jumping those taxes up on services that we're trying not to use. Yeah, you know, I've been a no vote on taxes every single year for, you know, the entire time I've been in office. So, what, 6 years now? On top of that, what I can't stand is, you know, when I watch the Republican Party, and this is kind of at the national level, or it seemed like the Republicans didn't want to win. They just wanted to lose well. And that doesn't sit right with me. I mean, my constituent didn't, you know, go represent us, here's the things we want you to do. Now get up there and, you know, look professional as you lose. I mean, you're still a loser. That's what I don't like. So, you know, I had people tell me, I guess I should explain the tax walkout. I guess you guys are targeted primarily at tech students, Texas Tech conservatives. So a little interesting, you know, if you're going to play the game, you need to know the rules. So whether you're going to sign up to be, you know, student council, you know, or a part of a board or anything like that, you need to know the rules. You need to understand how the law works on this. It's a little piece about the law as far as county commissioners are concerned. There's 5 members on the court. So we have to have a quorum. That means a majority. You have to have 3 members present in order to do business at your commissioner's court meetings. Now that's that way on everything except for one thing, and that one thing is on tax rates. On tax rates, you have to have a super quorum. You have to have at least 4 people. If you look this up and you Google super quorum, you won't find it. I made it up. But anyways, you've got to have at least 4. So that's an important thing to know. Now, here's the other thing that's important to know. Is that counties have to pass a tax rate by the end of September. If you don't pass that tax rate, then the tax rate automatically reverts back to the effective rate, the no new revenue rate, or the last year's tax rate, whichever one is lower. So you gotta read between the lines, put 2 and 2 together. So wait a minute, if the commissioners don't have enough members there to vote this tax rate in, then and you basically run out the clock. So also tax rates have to be passed at a regular scheduled meeting. Okay, so this last go around, Commissioner Rackler and myself, that's Commissioner from Precinct 4, that's exactly what we did. You know, we got into a situation where, you know, the other members of court just weren't trying to hear what we were having to say. And one of the things that the messaging that Commissioner Rackler and myself had put forward is that, guys, we're not overly concerned on how you spend the money, but what our big priority here is that you don't ask my voter for more. And I can work with you on everything else, but just don't go up on the tax rate. And other members of the court made it real clear that, you know, that wasn't the direction they were going in, and they had the majority, and that's what they were going to do. Well, that puts us in a position of having the bully pulpit. Now it's time to do something. So back to what I said about, you know, it always seemed to me like Republicans didn't want to win. They just wanted to lose well, and that's not good enough. Here's what do you do? Well, take your football and go home. So 2 members of the court refused to show up to the tax votes. That denied the super quorum, and we just didn't go to the last 2 meetings, and that ran out the clock. So guess what? Lubbock County got the effective rate. So your tax rate didn't go up, which is what my voter asked me for. That was the number one thing that my voters indicated to me that that's what they want. So that's my job to carry it out. And I didn't break the rules. I didn't violate the law. So, you know, if it's legal, if you don't like it, then go change the law. But until you do, I'm going to play by it.
Yeah, and you're right. There are ways to do that. We've had to not nearly the way that it's played out in commissioner's court, but just as conservatives and as Republicans, I will tell you the younger generation, they want change. They're not happy with a lot of stuff they see. They're not happy with the how do you lose well attitude, as you put it. They want people that will go in there and fight for them and take action, just as you just explained. There was a way to do it. I think we've also seen Ted Cruz is notorious for if there's a situation, he'll get up there and filibuster by reading the entire dictionary. I've seen him do it. And it's one of those things you can do to stall out. When you talk about, again, conservatives in power, there's a topic of why we don't do anything when conservatives are in power. And with that is a lot of frustration that conservative leadership doesn't always deliver on promises, especially from people that are new to politics and don't understand how it works. So what do you think causes that disconnect?
People are too busy being Republicans, Democrats, and not being Americans. I mean, right now in Congress, what we really need to see is our congressmen, getting on board and, getting as much, right now the Trump tax cuts, everything the DOGE is doing, that we've been really impressed with all that. Okay, codify that into law. The big, beautiful bill. I mean, I've looked through some of it, but not all of it. And that's my concern is just making sure that, we go ahead and get these things locked down and put in place. Because a lot of the stuff that DOGE has been doing, it's very practical. It's very granular. Okay. Congress doesn't always get in that far into it, but they should. And, now's your chance. I mean, it's those little things that'll make a big difference. My grandmother used to tell me, hey, look, if you worry about the pennies, the dollars are worried about themselves. If you talk to Elon Musk, that guy, you ask any of his employees about him, just going through everything on the rocket, on the Tesla, on the, on the Tesla truck or whatever it is, anything he's involved with, him going, okay, what is this? All right, why are we using that? Okay, well, can we get a better deal? He was always looking for that because if it's one of those things, if you're going to build 100,000 of something, that little 10 cent part matters, because what the multiplier is. So it's one of those things where it's worth doing that. So start looking at your processes, especially at the federal level. How many taxes are going to get filed every year? What, there's like 330 million Americans. So I'm going to go ahead and say that probably at least 150 million of them pay taxes. 200 million probably should. But anyway, when they're making those little changes in the tax code, this stuff matters. This is where we need to be at. If you're pointing to the federal level, that's something that I see right now that we really need to jump all over. State level stuff, it's like everything else. The devil's in the details. I've always had a good relationship with Carl Tepper, Dustin Burroughs, and Charles Perry. So we just keep an eye on legislation. So we see something coming through. There's some different voting bills that come through. One of them was to get rid of, what we enjoy here in Lubbock County is the super precincts for voting. And what it would have done is required Lubbock County to have a polling place in every single voting precinct, which I can already tell you we couldn't afford it. I mean, we couldn't raise your taxes high enough to pay for all the staff and all the equipment it would take. Lawfully, we couldn't go that high. We would never get there. So, that was, ones where we're picking up the phone and, I'm calling Dustin Burroughs, Charles Perry, and Carl Tepper. Usually I talk to their staff most of the time because, I understand those guys, they're busy. They're voting. They're on the other line with another constituent. So I usually get a hold of their staff. I'm calling Matt Crow. I'm calling Robin. I'm calling Corbin. I'm getting them on the phone and saying, hey, okay, I need you to take a look at this one. Look, we ran the numbers. You're going to take voting in Lubbock from, a $900,000 vote, you're going to turn this into about $3 million if that passes. And they'll look at it and say, well, state rep that put it forward said there'd be no cost. I'm like, I don't know what county he's in, but here's what it's going to do to your tax rate. So, that kind of communication is really key. The other thing, too, is having members of the legislature that understand that, down here, the county level, city level, this is where the boots meet, hit the ground. This is where people have a lot more interaction with their local elected officials than they may with their state reps, or their statewides or their congressmen. Just simply because we're around a little bit more. I don't spend time in Austin. I'm in Lubbock County. I'm in the Lubbock County Courthouse, or you can find me around the baseball field, usually coaching softball or something along those lines. So how do you tell if you're doing a good job at the local level? I just call it the grocery store index. If you walk down the fruit section and nobody throws produce at you, you're probably doing okay. We're kind of where the rubber meets the road. Having that communication with your state reps as well as your congressman's office is always a plus. And you just got to make sure that you're communicating with those guys. And, because I mean, you look at all the bills. I think there was 5,000-6,000 bills that ran through Austin this last go around. So, that being said, I mean, one, they can't watch them all. Two, that's an awful lot. I mean, you have to know an awful lot about a lot of things. And, you know, your state reps, they're going to need a subject matter expert on the thing. So I try to lend that service as a county commissioner just to get on the phone with those guys and like, hey, by the way, this bill's being proposed. This is what it's actually going to cost your constituents. You know, just getting that information in front of them. And there's been some things I've been told, hey, well, this is going to happen whether you like it or not. And it's been, I'll give you a good example was converting over to the paper ballots. You know, what we projected on that was going to cost Lubbock County about $5 million for that conversion. So that was phone calls to state reps saying, okay, look, we bought voting machines according to the rules at the time. Now you guys you're changing the rules. You're moving the goalpost here. We need a little help. You know, you're going to cost my constituents $5 million. What can we do? What can we work out? And, you know, it was made pretty clear pretty quickly that, you know, they weren't aware that it was going to be that expensive. The other thing that we figured out pretty fast was that there weren't that many counties that had that kind of equipment. So the retrofit wasn't that bad. The state was able to absorb those costs. They kicked it back to us that, all right, look, we'll pay 90% if you get it implemented within the first year. Oh, okay. Yeah, no problem. Done. You know, had it done. State chipped in on that. Otherwise, we were afraid that equipment was no longer going to be allowed to be used anymore. It was only 2 years old. It would have cost the county $7.3 million. So, you know, that's definitely a tax increase to our taxpayers.
That's very well put, and thank you for going into such detail on that, because I really think when people understand how stuff works, it not only makes them a better politician, but a better asset to their community, because then they'll kind of know how to interact and how to fight for what they believe in and support what they believe in. So Lubbock has, and I don't know if this does extend to county. I know it has in the past. How do you respond to critics who say conservatives become complacent or ineffective once elected? And I'm going to tie that into maybe the road work. And I know the situation with the road work, but I'm going to let you elaborate on that a little bit, because I know that it's TxDOT and all that.
Oh, okay. You're talking about 19th Street, I imagine?
Yeah. Yes, sir.
Okay. Yeah. Here's the thing. This is not a job. This is an elected position. You know, when I ran for county commissioner, I ran over the previous commissioner wouldn't water the county park, and I disagreed. I thought it was worth doing, and he told me it cost $3,000 to water it each summer. So I went around to the other soccer parents. We had enough kids playing. We all threw in $30 and here, you know, go please water the park. We're willing to do it that way. That wasn't a good enough answer. So I signed up to run. And if you're going to run for elected office, your goal needs to be get in, get the things done that you want, and get out. People that want to be placeholders, people who, like if somebody said, I just want to be the county commissioner, I would question your motives. But if you come up and you say, hey, I don't want my taxes. I don't want the county raising my taxes. I want my roads fixed. I want this. I want that. I was like, great. You know, okay. That's somebody that, you know, I feel I can trust because I know what their motives are. I know what they're interested in. I know what they're after. But yeah, you know, when somebody tells me, well, you know, conservatives just get elected, then they don't do anything. Well, you know what? You're not wrong. A lot of times that's the case. And it's a frustration for me, you know, back to the, you know, conservatives don't want to win. They just want to lose. Well, that's what I can't stand. So yeah, I'll sit there and tell somebody, hey, you're not wrong. But for me personally, that put a little chip on my shoulder. The park and the county park now that it's in my precinct, it now has a golf course level sprinkler system. That grass is watered. We switched away. We know we use all private contractors now, which has saved me about $20,000 per year on labor switching that direction. I mean, we've got nice grass. We're, you know, fixed up the facilities, soccer fields, baseball fields are there. These things have all been approved. We planted 32 trees this year. We put in new playground equipment. We've updated the clubhouse. You know, it's just a matter of just somebody that just wanted to step up to the plate and get something done. And, you know, those are the things that I can point to. But, you know, when people say, well, Republicans get in there and then they don't do anything. Yeah, they're right. And I can point to a lot of good examples on that. What's the answer? Well, don't do that. I mean, get in there and get something done. But here's the thing. When it's time to hang it up, it's time to hang it up. When you lose the drive, when you lose the motivation, you know, now it's time to pass the torch. And commissioners serve four-year terms, so how many terms do you have in you? Well, if you've only got four, after four, hang it up. Pass it off to somebody. If you've got two terms, if you can stand 8 years, pass it off. If you're willing to do 12, good. You know, if you want 16, we're going to do a mental health check on you. Just to make sure there's nothing wrong with it, because now you're just a glutton for punishment. But I think there's a lot of people that need to know when they need to step away. The other thing too, all right, so I'll tell you a little story. Try not to stay off my soapbox on this one. Let's see. Lord of the Rings. Okay, that came out when I was a young man, but maybe not you guys so much. What do you think about your demographic? Did you guys grow up watching Lord of the Rings? Was that like the cool movie when you were a kid?
Man, I had Star Wars, Lord of the Rings. I'm 34, so.
Gotcha. Okay. Okay, so you might be a little more in line with this, but what about your partner here?
Growing up, it was mainly like Harry Potter and in a way Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, but
gotcha.
For the
okay.
most part, it was just Harry Potter.
Go back and rewatch Lord of the Rings. Now, you know, what are they doing? They got this ring. They're trying to destroy it. It's the one ring that controls all the other rings, right? So go back and watch that movie. And I don't know if Tolkien meant it this way, but it certainly makes a good metaphor. The ring is power. At the end of the day, that's what it is. And look at Gollum. You know, the little shrunken, you know, creature. You know, Gollum used to be used to be a hobbit, right? The little happy ones, all they do is like fish and eat. You know, they want second, third breakfast. Okay. So the ring represents power. What does power do? Well, we already know this. Power corrupts. Absolute power corrupts absolutely. People that want power are corrupt. People who hang on to power too long become corrupt. So, you know, if you watch that movie, like, you had all these good guys that all really intended to want to do good things. You know, some of them wanted to, you know, they were going to free their land. They were going to fight off all the orcs. You know, they were going to do all this good stuff with it. But every time they touched the ring, they automatically became corrupt and just drunk with power. Okay. There's a lesson that people need to understand. If you choose to be a leader of any type, if you choose to serve in any kind of office, and that's simply this: power corrupts, absolute power corrupts absolutely. So if you are willing to serve in office, then we're thankful to have you, because there's not a lot of people that are willing. There's no shortage of people that are willing to complain and just sit back and point fingers. There's very few people that are willing to, you know, to actually step into the fray and, you know, be the person that steps out there and does something about it. But if you're willing to do that, you know, how long can you deal with something that's so corruptive, you know, and not allow it to corrupt you? Well, that number, that's going to be different for everybody. There's a lot of things people can do to make sure they stay grounded and stay based. Because if you're not, you know, if you ever let that go to your head, and I can point to a dozen examples, hubris, I mean, it gets people. I mean, it really does. I mean, you know, pride cometh before a fall. You know, that's in the Bible. It's written there for a reason. So you have to be aware of those things if you're going to try to serve in a leadership role. You know, Bible also tells us those who are, you know, the people that need to be leaders are the best servants. You know, they're the ones that are willing to serve. You know, only those that are fit to serve are fit to lead. So that's something we've got to keep in mind. So I tend to be real leery of people that say, hey, I want to be, you know, I want to be the county commissioner. I want to be the whatever, just to be the whatever. You know, the guy that comes in and says, hey, I want to get in that spot so I can fix X, Y, and Z. Okay. Hey, I know your motives here. But yeah, go back and watch Lord of the Rings and give that some thought about power. And that'll probably teach you everything you need to know about politicians and people in power, and you know, what they do and why. And it's a little easier to absorb the information than it is reading Machiavelli's The Prince.
There's a lot of accountability when you talk about power and corruption, and then you bring politicians and leaders into it. And I say that to ask, what can grassroots conservatives do and young Republicans do to hold their leaders more accountable?
Stay in contact with them. That's one of the most important things you can do. And the other thing that, you know, let's see, you would be amazed how few phone calls people in elected office actually get about certain issues. If you want to make a difference, call the office of an elected official once a week. And it doesn't have to be the same one. Like, you know, figure out who your city councilman is, your city council, your mayor, your state rep, your congressman, your state senator, your national senator as well. Just make a list and get their – you don't even talk to them directly. Just get their office numbers. Call their office. If you do this one – just pick one a day. Do it for 3 months. You got the summer break. Just call them and say, hey, I like this or I don't like that. one, you're going to be surprised how many responses you're going to get back. I guarantee you call a congressman or a senator, you'll get an email back for sure, because that's the first thing they want is your contact information. But you would be amazed how influential you become when you start to do that, because nobody calls elected officials anymore. I mean, nobody writes letters. You know, I mean, you get very few emails. I mean, it's on rare occasion. Like, I'll give you an example. I know Commissioner Rackler did the walkout with me. You know, he's a new commissioner. He was kind of like, man, I don't know. I don't know if this is the right thing to do. I don't know what I'd be doing. He put it on Facebook, said, hey, I need to hear from the constituents of Precinct 4. I need to hear from you guys. What should I do? Should I do the walkout to force the tax rate to be lower? And he told me he got 495 messages, phone calls, and emails over that. Okay, all positive in favor of him doing the walkout. That man represents 75,000 people. So what was that? Less than what, 7,500 would be 1% then? So less than 1% of his constituents contacted him to make a suggestion on what he ought to do on one particular vote. Do you know how powerful those 495 people are when you stop and think about it? I mean, tax dollar wise, do you know what the kind of difference that made in the pockets of so many people over there? Just keep that in mind. Now, most people are not aware of how much influence they actually wield. So if I'm talking to young conservatives, I'm saying you want to make a difference. Number one, call your elected officials. Call them regularly. Number two, political seasons come around. Right, wrong, or indifferent, elected officials listen a lot better when their name's on the ballot. So start making those phone calls. You become a lot more influential. Block walk. Pick a campaign that you like. Get involved. And, you know, pick your area and map it out and start learning how these campaigns work. Start learning how to become even more influential. Because I'll tell you right now, I mean, if you're willing to go out, if you will show up to any elected official's office, or excuse me, anybody running for an elected office and say, hey, I want to go knock doors for you, they will gladly hand you 100 door knockers and give you a list of people to go talk to. If you're willing to do that, you'll pretty well, that's a state rep, that's a congressman, whoever. When you call their office from then on, you'll probably be able to get through to them and talk to them personally, because they're going to remember, one, that you helped them. Two, you were willing to get out and block walk. So three, that makes you a very powerful person. The other one is if you want to donate. Most people in elected office at the state level and above will keep a donor list. And if you donated $10, your name's on a list somewhere, and you are going to have a little bit more stroke with that individual. And now I'm not saying they're going to just, you know, for $10, they're going to do whatever you tell them. But what I am saying is you could probably expect a phone call back. You could probably expect to get to speak to somebody a little bit higher level who's got a little more power within that office. But the number one most important thing to do is to get out and vote, because, yes, people in elected office do look at that. You know, they're going to look and see, like, if you're running in a primary, Republican primary, we call it the hard R's. These are the people that don't miss elections. You know, these are the guys that go out and vote for dog catcher. Those people, they matter. They get the phone calls. They get all the emails. They get everything because they vote consistently. So you know this person's going to a poll, so you know that vote's important. So it's worth the trouble to go out and to try to make sure that you incur some favor with that voter. But yeah, that's probably my top list of, you know, how to be more influential, especially at a younger level if I'm talking to a college age Republican.
That's a good point. I think a lot of people have kind of forgotten that you got to pay your dues, so to speak. You've got to earn your place. When you get involved in politics, your voice does matter. It matters a lot. But you can't just jump in and expect everyone's going to listen to what you say. They're going to take you serious. They're going to put you in a position of leadership. You have to work your way up and go for stuff. Like, I have a lot of people in Lubbock that they'll approach me because I'm young, I'm loud, and I can be pretty vocal when I care about something or I'm rattled, and I know that. And they'll tell me, why don't you run for city council? Why don't you run for mayor? Well, no, it's not time for any of that. I'm in school. I'm sick. I just want to be, you know, in the party. I want to help them and do what I can, and then we'll look into that stuff later. And that's kind of part of what I'm doing with college Republicans. And I'm learning how legislation works and how stuff works at civic, municipality, collegiate, state and federal, congressional levels. But I think you're a much better asset if you have some type of background and you know what you're talking about.
Oh, definitely. Knowledge is power. Yeah, the more you know about it, the more of an asset you are to whoever it is that you're trying to support or whoever you're working with. And the more opposing you are when you're trying to oppose legislation, or, you know, if you've got somebody running for office you really think is, you know, immoral or something like that, you really don't want to see get elected. Yeah, you've got a lot more power when you know how the system works and, you know, and how to approach it.
Talking about power and leadership, you start thinking about what direction do we need to move the party. In your view, what should be the top priorities for the Republican Party in Texas and nationally, since we are, especially in West Texas, we are largely conservative and not a lot of people know that.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, you know, we got to know where we came. You can't know where you're going if you don't know where you've been. That's one of the most important things to remember. But I mean, it is possible to you know, maintain our conservative values while we grow into the future. So that being said, you know, of course we're going to continue to be pro-life. Of course we're going to be the party of fiscal responsibility. But we need to be embracing new technologies. We need to be looking into new ways to do the old things that we've always done. And I mean, you're starting to see a pushback just in society in general, like homesteading. That's one of the things that I kind of grew up with. Like, you know, okay, yeah, you know, you plant a garden and you raise some animals. You know, that's kind of normal stuff. Now it's kind of in vogue. And anyway, so I mean, that's something that we're looking at. Well, why are we doing that? You know, what's going on with the food supply? You know, that's a conversation that's getting brought up pretty regular, going, you know what? I don't know what's in this stuff I'm eating. And I think a lot of it, you know, and maybe my generation's a little bit older, so you guys may be just kind of starting to, you know, hear a little bit more about this, but I don't know how food conscious, you know, your generation is yet, just lack of experience. But, you know, with that demographic on that level, but you know, that's something that's starting to come up. You know, we're starting to see that. But when we come to the technology end of it, we're going, okay, you know, well, do we need to be using Roundup? Is that a good idea? Well, what about, you know, what is in this food? You know, why are there so many things on the back of the cereal box that I can't spell? You know, these kinds of questions. And I bring that up just as an example, because there's a lot of technology that's coming out now that is allowing us to go back to some of the old ways of doing things. But we're able to do it where it's less labor intensive, you know, a little bit. I mean, you got a little better tractor, you can plant a bigger garden, you know, these kinds of things. But we have to be willing to embrace that technology, because, you know, I mean, my background was in the oil field. You think, oh, yeah, that guy's not going to support electric cars. Well, wait a minute. Hold on. Let's talk about this. Electric cars aren't new. Those things actually, they were around in the 1930s. Milk wagons were done that way. You know, trains are diesel electrics. You know, all the drilling rigs I worked on were diesel electric. You know, so I was used to, you know, electric motors, knowing that they produced more, you know, more torque, more traction. You know, that's just from general industry. So now putting that into a car, huh, okay, you know, that makes sense. Now, maybe not for the guy that, you know, drives over the road 12 hours a day and is going to travel 900 miles. That might not make sense, but wait a minute, but I don't do that. You know, let's see, I'm going to drop the kids off at school. I'm going to head to the courthouse. I'm going to go run to the grocery store after work. You know, then I'm going to head back over here for soccer practice, and I won't drop the kids back, you know, and then come back to the house where I could plug the thing in. Okay, you know, I mean, I log 90 miles in a day. Well, huh, that battery's good for 350. This makes sense. Hold on a second. Maybe we ought to take a second look at this. So I think that's, you know, kind of the direction the Republican Party needs to be. You know, we can still maintain our conservative values as we move into the future and we embrace technology. We haven't discussed this much yet, but AI technology, you know, you guys spend any time down in Austin? Have you seen those self-driving cars that drives around town in Austin?
Oh, those things are crazy. They
drive. I know. I get a good laugh out of them every time I see one go by. But so they ran into a little problem. Had a little incident with one of those cars. You know, it's AI, right? You know, okay. So they set up their AI. That's what's operating the vehicle. That's what's logging a lot of the data. So little car's going down the road, and it messed up something, and it hits a parked car. The car stops, the electric car stops and backs up for a minute, and it sits there for a second, and then it just speeds off the other direction. They got caught on camera. So they're like, hey, wait a minute. You know, this thing comes in and it's got a dent in the fender and a busted headlight. And they're like, guys, like, wait, what's going on? So, you know, they log in the software, like, okay, what happened? So they're looking at it and they're kind of asking the AI, like, they're looking at the decisions it made. And they figured out that it wasn't sure why it had the wreck. But it knew that it had it. It backed up, and they could see where it kind of thought about it for a minute. And then the AI decided that this wreck might cause the city of Austin to shut the program down, which would mean that it's no longer viable. It's not going to be out driving anymore. So it decided the best thing to do was just to drive off. So the car came to the conclusion that a hit and run was better than actually reporting the accident. Okay. I was like, congratulations, you know, to the programmers. You raised a 16-year-old, probably a 16-year-old boy. And, you know, so what are we finding here? You know, the AIs that we're creating, they reflect the bias of the people who created them. You know, it's no different. It's not much different than a child. And that right there, so who do you want programming this AI? Do you want somebody programming the AI who's got Christian values? Do you want who's Christian values, pro-family, pro-life? Or do you want the other side programming this thing? And that's scary because what we're figuring out is AI is no different than raising children. It's going to reflect the bias of the programmer, just like the children reflect the bias of the parent. And then contradictory information does it take to change that opinion? Well, you know, I would ask, what do you disagree with your father on? If you're a boy, what do you disagree with your dad on? If you're a girl, what do you disagree with your mom on? And that kind of gives you an idea of, you know, how these AIs are coming together. So, you know, that right there, I mean, okay, you know, I've got a friend that's a programmer and he's got his little AI avatar that he talks to all the time that he uses for stuff. And I mean, he's pre-programmed, you know, different things in there for how the, you know, how it's supposed to understand morality, you know, and how it does its decision trees. And the answers that he gets out of his AI is different than what you would find on Google, like Gemini or something like that. So, you know, it comes down to who the programmer is. Well, okay, who do we want programming these things? I want people that have my values, you know, programming these things. The Conservative Party, like I said, we don't need to be the party of no. You know, we don't have to be the party that just, you know, anything new is bad. You know, that's not conservative. That's just short-sightedness. You know, we need to be the party that's leading in innovation and technology and making sure that the direction that we want the world to go in, that, you know, the AI supports it. That, you know, I mean, are we driving electric cars? Are we driving hydrogen-powered cars, water-powered engines? What's that going to look like? Well, I mean, as long as it makes government less powerful and more efficient, then, yeah, it makes me any difference. But I just want to make sure we get that influence in there.
There definitely needs to be a foundation because – and you probably know this. I knew it working for Matt Adams. Farmers – let me put it this way. The farmers that can afford it, when they have their big combines and their tractors, they learned early on that all they have to do is get a setup with a built-in GPS – mm-hmm. And they can program that in their phone, their home office, wherever they're at, watch it, monitor it. Hey, now they don't have to pay a whole bunch of hands. All they have to do is sit one person in that tractor in case something goes away it shouldn't, and they can correct it on the spot. And I think early on it would go so far, but it didn't know when to turn, so that's why they would have someone.
Right.
And I think now they do that, but –
Yeah. No, I remember some of that early technology. That stuff was great. You know, I mean, it gets you the straightest row you could imagine. And anyways, perfectly straight rows every single time. And then all you had to do was turn it around at the end of the row. And, you know, and that was great. The other thing that it did was it, you know, you didn't need as much experience in the field and the person operating the tractor, you know, to get a very good product. And so that was the benefit to it. But we see that in AI all over. You know, there's been some robots that they've done some testing on. One of them was, I think it was a McDonald's. It's a fast food restaurant. Anyways, where they started replacing staff with using robots. So, you know, we're talking about just a, you know, burger place. So now you had the little robot that go over there, pull the bag of frozen French fries out, rip it off, dump it into the fryer, you know, set the basket in, you know. But anyways, they started automating all these different things. And they were getting a very precise product that was coming out the other end. And it was less labor intensive. And a lot of people were sitting there going, oh, my God, you know, you got rid of you got rid of five jobs. Oh, that's terrible. And I was sitting there. I was like, yeah, but who wants to be a fry cook? I did that in college. It wasn't any fun. I didn't enjoy doing it and getting burns on my arms, you know, from doing that and getting minimum wage for it at that. You know, and I mean, nobody's like just jumping up and down to do that. But then you stop and you look, wait. How much is the technician that repairs the machine getting paid? And yeah, you find out, oh yeah, this guy makes 80 grand a year. Oh, okay. And, you know, that he didn't have to go to college. He got trained in robotics. And, you know, now he's coming in, checking these things. He's running programs. What about the programmer that sets this stuff up? Oh, yeah, that man's making really good money, too. And he's looking over 10, 15 different stores. So what's happening, the tech is upgrading, okay? The skills in order to manage that tech is going up, too. So it's becoming much more technical. So what's happening to human beings? Well, we're going right along with it. And now, but it is less labor intensive. It makes a lot of things less dangerous. You know, I can think of some automated setups that we had on drilling rigs that were first starting to come out when I was kind of getting out of the oil field. And I mean, it was really reducing, you know, a lot of the exposure points, you know, on a drilling rig. So it was making the operation considerably more safe, you know, to operate just because of the, you know, just by removing, you know, some of the human interaction with, I don't know, with drill pipe and, you know, just, you know, with the blocks, just blunt objects. We'll just leave it at that. So, you know, I mean, I watched this technology and industry and thought, okay, this is great. You know, this is the direction we want to be moving in. But to people that say, well, yeah, you're getting rid of low wage jobs, but you're also replacing, you know, you might replace three low wage jobs with a high wage paying job. The other thing too, I mean, it's new, but it's not. Let me say it that way, if that makes any sense. You know, how many, like, y'all ever heard of a ditch digger? Is that like a threat? Yeah, you ever get told if you don't go to school, make good grades, you're gonna be a ditch digger when you grow up? You ever heard that? Okay, that was a real thing. That was a real job. There used to be people, that's what they did. They swung a shovel all day or a pickaxe. And you know, that's hard, back-breaking work, especially as hard as the dirt is around here. So how many ditch diggers got put out of a job by one backhoe? Well, I can tell you about 20 is what that did. Nobody is complaining about losing their ditch digging job. So, yeah, I mean, it's, yeah, technology advancing is not a bad thing at all. Now it is going to do some shift. It's going to do some shifts. It's going to do a lot of changes. And some things are changing really dramatically that I think a lot of us are not paying attention to, like computer programming. You know, guys, when I was in school, now here, you know, dating myself now, I graduated in 2006. Okay. Programming was a good job back then. Now, what are we seeing? Programming, a lot of it was going over to India. Now the India is getting too expensive. You're seeing programming going to, the Philippines. That's another place right now. If you're trying to get programming done at a lower cost, that's where a lot of companies are going to. So, yeah, it's, I mean, we're seeing these changes and these shifts, and it's happened really rapidly because, you know, a lot of people thought, oh yeah, the computer stuff, you know, the guy flipping the burger will be out of a job. Well, okay. Yeah. If you want the automated, quickly made pre-burger, but here's what they're forgetting. The machine stuff is nice. You know, it's quick and it's easy and it's more efficient, but man, I like that greasy hamburger. You know, I like that artisan pizza. You know, I like that one that's not, you know, this is coming from a guy that used to own a Hunt's Brothers pizza. You know, I love that pizza. It was stamped out. It was ready to go. It was always consistent and it was good. But you know what? I still drove into town and went to, what's that pizza? What's the pizza place over there by, what's that coffee shop just south of Tech? That I'm sure.
You talking about Capital Pizza?
Yes, Capital Pizza. I would still go to Capital Pizza and pay twice what I was paying for Hunt Brothers pizza. Why? I mean, it was an artisan pizza. I was paying more money for a product. It wasn't the same product. It was more of an artisan product. That's what you're going to see with technology. You're going to see like you guys have seen all the AI pictures and stuff, right? You know, you're seeing the graphics. They look sharp. They look good. Until you look a little closer, you're like, hey, wait a minute. You know, why does that woman have six fingers? You know, have you ever noticed those little things? I saw this one deal. It was talking about like an engine. So it popped up a picture of a motor and you look at it and you're like, oh, that looks good. It looks like a V8. And you're like, wait a minute. There's a cylinder head running down the middle of the motor. There's two wide out like a, you know, a V pattern. And then the pistons were like on the outside of the block. And I'm going, okay, well, nice try AI, but, no, not quite. So the machine is never going to be – it's never going to be quite what it is. You can't replace that human interaction. You can't replace, you know, those little things. So, yeah, people aren't going to go away, but these changes are coming one way or the other. So as far as the Republican Party is concerned, we need to be aware of that. We need to be embracing that, and we need to be making sure that, you know, that technology is advancing in a direction that you know, is the way that we want. So, I mean, like, let's talk pro-life on that front and technology. Okay, 22 weeks, right, for a viable fetus. Is that still kind of, or, you know, by the way, fetus is Latin for baby. I don't know why liberals always like to forget that. So even they got me saying it now. But anyway, so that unborn baby, that unborn child, 22 weeks is viability, right? Okay. Can we push that back? You know, what about an artificial womb? I mean, these are conversations that are starting to come up. You know, we're getting into cloning and the morality of that. You know, if you clone a person, does it have a soul? If you get cloned, do you share a soul with your clone? How's that going to work? I mean, I have no idea. But these are the questions that are going to come up, and I want conservative answers. That's the mindset in which that I want this happening. So how do you do that? Do you go out and you fight in politics and you block walk and you elect candidates and you do all that? Yeah, sure. But what's more important is you teach your kids what's right or wrong. Instill that morality, into our children. And that's that base level programming that we talk about in AI. You know, if you're instilling that morality in your children, you know, maybe it's not my generation that has to answer that question about cloning. Maybe it's my daughters. Maybe it's my sons. But if they've got that base level understanding of, you know, conservative values, of Christian principles and teachings, then I feel a lot more comfortable knowing how those decisions are going to be made by that generation. And that's one of the most important things. Sometimes Republicans, we're not the best about training up the next generation. Sometimes we eat our own. So it's really important, especially, you know, I'm 42. Guys my age need to be interacting with guys your age and your age and having these conversations with tech kids, with young conservatives to say, okay, look, here's where we're at. Here's how we got here. And, you know, here's where I think we're going. So, because there's a lot of stuff that, you know, if I'm talking to somebody that's in their early 20s, I'm like, hey, do y'all listen to this? Or what about that? Or what do y'all see with this? And, you know, and I mean, I get some surprising answers sometimes. I'm like, huh, okay, I hadn't thought about it like that. But then again, you know, the world that I grew up in is something you guys have seen in like news clips or, you know, highlight reels. I saw a deal today. It said if Marty McFly from Back to the Future, you know, that movie's in 85. He goes back to 1955. That's the same thing if you went back today to 1995. And I'm sitting here going, oh, God, my first car was a Ford F-150, a 92 model. So I'm like, wow, okay. Trying not to be Biff here. So, you know, that's that difference that, you know, that's kind of shocking to me, you know, at 42. So when I'm talking to people your age, I'm like, okay, what do y'all think about this? What are you seeing? What do you hear?
Yeah, those are definitely some crazy theories that I've probably never heard of, but I do have to agree with you on teaching younger conservatives, and it ties into our next question. But before we switch to that question, I've got to say that for some weird reason, in the back of my mind, it always turns to the Terminator series and how Cybernet will eventually take over. And some part of me says that could happen.
I mean, there's definitely the potential for it to go wrong. So the AI that China was developing, I thought this was interesting. I mean, a little scary. They named it Skynet. I was like, oh, God, really, guys? And I'm sitting there like, they're like, well, you know, China, they don't know. I was like, yes, they do. They bootlegged all of those movies for the last 30 years. Don't tell me they don't know. They know exactly what that is. And I was like, they're just doing that to make me paranoid. I mean, you guys, but they're also selling blood pressure medication. So I feel like I'm being tricked here. So anyways, so the AI stuff, there's so many good movies on how this can go wrong. Go back and watch. I'm a movie buff, but go back and watch iRobot with Will Smith in it.
And, oh, I love that movie.
Yeah, remember the three rules? The three rules that robots could, you know, that they couldn't violate, that they couldn't do that? That's great if you program it in there. However, don't assume everybody else is doing that. The other thing, and this is another good reason to learn a foreign language, or actually the translation software has gotten so good now that you practically don't have to. It's starting to look like Star Trek. But look at some of the hunter-killer drones that were being used in Ukraine by the Russians and the Ukrainians. You know, they had these things set up to where, you know, they may fly over a certain sector and then they're detecting, you know, looking for somebody. And, you know, whether it had a camera on it or not, I don't know. I think it was just programmed. But these things, I mean, it was just an explosive. It was a very cheap drone. They're like $50, $100, something like that. But it would just, you know, it's chasing this guy, just flies straight into him and explodes. And, you know, very inexpensive to build. So, you know, if you're looking at drone technology, oh man. Okay. Now you got me on the soapbox. All right. Drones. Here we go. So, you know, these things are extremely inexpensive to make. One of the big concerns that I've had for probably the last 2 years now with the drones, as far as, you know, public safety is concerned, I really do believe that the drones are going to be the next backpack bomb. I think it's very concerning to me. You know, you could go into, somebody's going to go into, you know, Best Buy, buy their little drone, order it online, you know, get some homemade explosives, and then use that to attack, large group of people, stuff like that. So, you know, large outdoor events, you know, that's something that's as if elected officials don't have enough things to be paranoid about with public safety. But for me, that is one, after watching everything that's been going on in Ukraine, that's really been on my radar. I mean, I've had a couple conversations with local FBI agents about it, just say, hey, this is something we need to be aware of, you know, and be looking at. And fortunately, they agreed. So, you know, they're looking into that that matter for us. But one more thing to be ever vigilant about. But that drone technology, I mean, just from what we're seeing right now, that is going to change the face of, you know, well, it's already changing the face of warfare. The other thing it's going to change the face of is get ready for deliveries. You know, Amazon's been working on this. They got certain areas where they're allowed to do it, where they're allowed to deliver packages with drones. We're seeing drone spraying being very common now in West Texas with crops, especially the battery powered stuff. Way less fuel requirements than it is for an airplane. You know, it's not the same. It's different, but it can do the same job in certain aspects, and sometimes with a higher degree of accuracy. But anyways, drone technology, like if you guys are looking for something that is going to, you know, that's worth studying right now, that's going to change the face of what the world looks like over the next 50 years, it's definitely going to be the use of AI, the use of drones. Predictive analytics is another thing to be looking at, you know, if that's something you want to get into. But, you know, hey, maybe you don't want to be an electrical engineer and you don't want to build the drone, but, you know, if you're going to be the guy that runs the warehouse, get ready. Go to Home Depot, go to Costco. You guys seen the little floor buffer that just drives itself?
Yeah.
Take that same sensory technology that they have on there. Put that on a forklift. Now what could you do? Stocking shelves that way. Tyson, I know, who's at Pilgrim's Pride Chicken. They have a chicken plant down in it's nearly to Houston that is set up to where, you know, live chicken goes in one side and cutlets come out the other, and the whole thing is completely automated from one end to the other. So you know, that's the meat processing is hard work, and you know, it can be very dangerous. So you know, that's, you know, they've automated that process completely, but that is going to be one thing that you are going to see from here on out. In the short run, let me throw out some predictions. So, you know, if I'm right about this in a couple of years, yeah, you guys can call me back and let me know. But the fireworks shows, I think are going to get replaced by drones in the next 10 years. So you're definitely going to see that. We're already seeing that usage, that being used in law enforcement. We haven't seen the automated side yet, but you better believe it's coming. Hopefully, yeah. An iRobot situation, not a RoboCop situation. There's three movies of that, you know, showed how that didn't work out too well. But yeah, sorry. How did we get on this rabbit hole? What was your original question?
All right. I mean, changing faces definitely ties into this next question, which is, what are your biggest hopes and concerns for Lubbock County over the next 5 to 10 years?
Hopes and concerns over the next 10 years. 10 years. All right. So yeah, 5 to 10 years. Okay. We have got to get Lubbock County on board with a couple of things. Effective tax rates is where we need to be. It shouldn't cost more to run the same business every single year. Also, effective tax rates. See, now I'm using the old man term. Okay, so no new revenue tax rates. What that is that means that Lubbock County will get the same amount of money that we got last year off of the existing property at that time. Now, there's always going to be the new construction, at least the rate we're growing anyways. We still get money from the new construction dollars as well. So like this year, Lubbock County, we had a budget last year of $160 million roughly. So we're going to pick up another $6 million in new construction. So we're looking at trying to put together a budget of about $166 million, you know, ballpark. Okay, so, you know, that being understood, you know, keeping that cost down is right now is tough. So and the reason being is because we're growing like crazy. So Texas counties, when they hit 300,000, the rush is on to hit 500,000. They typically do that in about 10 years is what – there's one economist that kind of likes to study this stuff. And he's – so far, I mean, he's got the numbers to prove it. Lubbock County, we're tracking. I think we're going to do it in 7. That's my prediction. So here's – I mean, people are like, wow, that's great. We're growing. And I was like, yeah, okay, but – it's like if your feet were growing so fast that you had to run between shoe stores to get another pair. That's kind of where Lubbock's at on the road situation. But your infrastructure, you have to keep up with your infrastructure. Well, how are you going to do that? If you're trying to keep your taxes low, you know, one thing that we're going to have to do is get that to the voter is going to be like bonds. You know, conservatives, we're always taught, no, bonds are bad. We don't borrow money. And you know what? I agree. It doesn't make sense. Like, okay, you guys, if you go buy a new car, all right, you're gonna make 60 payments to make to buy the car. Well, why are you buying a car? Well, you need to get to work. Okay. All right. So if I go buy a new car, I'm going to make, you know, I want something that's reliable. It's not breaking down all the time. You know, I'm young. I live in an apartment. I mean, I don't have time to go out. I don't have a garage to go wrench on this thing. So I really can't buy a used one and try to keep it running. You know, if you're that guy, you're like, okay, so it makes sense to make 60 payments on a car, right? So, it doesn't make sense to make 60 payments on a couch. Okay. You wouldn't do that. You know, by the time you pay that thing off, it's going to be ruined anyways. It doesn't make any sense. Okay. So let's apply that logic to government. Couple things. One, what are interest rates right now? What are you guys seeing? About 7%?
I think so.
See, I'm so old. I haven't had to buy anything where I had to go look at the interest rates. So anyways, you're like 7, 8, 9%, depending on what you're trying to do. Okay. Lubbock County right now, we can borrow money at about 3 to 4%. So, but we're also dealing, we had to deal with the high inflation during the Biden years. So what happened? You know, we borrowed money to build a road or to build roads. You know, we took out we had a road bond in 2019 and, you know, we borrowed the money, we paid the engineers, they got to work on it 2 or 3 years later, they got their projects engineered and, now we're, you know, okay, but what happened? Well, prices went up 80% in that period of time. So that inflation, that would be like if we took the money, put it under the mattress and the rats ate it. That's what happened with the inflation. So what you have to be careful of there is thinking, oh, yeah, we'll just save money and that's how we'll get there. When your inflation is that high, when you've got some really bad leadership in Washington that's allowing that to happen, you will never catch up. You will never get there. So what are you better off to do? Depending on the interest rates, you got to work the math both ways. And a lot of people don't want to take the time to look at it that way. It's just too easy to say bonds are bad. Okay. Well, no, debt, not all debt is bad. Stupid debt is bad. You buy a house, it's going to improve, you know, it's going to increase in value. That makes sense. You know, you buy a depreciating asset, you know, guys don't, so advice that I would give somebody your age, Don't go buy a motorcycle with credit. Don't do that. It's a bad idea. It's going to cost you way too much money. The interest is too high, and you're going to wind up in the hospital. I'd also tell you the same thing about don't do that with a jet ski either. So, these are depreciating assets. These things don't, they don't gain you anything. But you want to go borrow money and buy a house? Yeah, I think it's a good idea. When is a good time to buy a house? Well, today. Tomorrow it will be more expensive. I can guarantee you that. Regardless of what interest rates do, the economy, everything else, that house will cost you more tomorrow than it will today to buy. So if we're thinking about that and we start applying that logic to government, okay, you know, as Lubbock County grows, we will have to build a bigger jail. We will need to add courts. We will need to build roads. And why are we having to do all these things? Is it because you've got people in office that just can't wait to spend money? No, it's because we're growing. And so the automatic question is like, well, what happens if you don't do that? Well, it's real simple. You wind up like Travis County in Austin. They can't afford to build a road anywhere. It's too expensive. There's too many houses in the way. So what happens? This is where the toll roads come in, because there's no other way to do it. You can't afford it. So that's what starts to happen. Now you've gotten behind on your infrastructure. If you ever get behind on your infrastructure, as far as a city or county is concerned, you will never catch up. So what do you need to do? If you're a county commissioner, you're in a growing county like Lubbock, get your taxpayer the effective tax rate. Then the road that has fallen apart, that we know is falling apart, that it's two lanes right now and it really needs to be five. Get the, you know, pay the engineers, get the plan together, get that out to the voter and say, okay, guys, what do you want to do? Take a look at this. You know, right now, this is a $30 million project. We'll pay it out over 30 years. You know, you're looking at, you know, it's probably going to cost you $20. You're probably looking at about $20 on your tax rate on a $300,000 home. It's probably where you're going to be at. What do you want to do? And let the voter decide. Get that out in front of them and let them look at it and say, yeah, you know, let's see. It's $2,000 to fix the front end of my car, you know, because I've been whacking these potholes left and right. Or I can go ahead and start paying $20 and, you know, it's going to cost me $20 a year for the next 30 years. So, you know, what do I want to do? You know what? Yeah, let's go ahead and fix the road. That makes sense. You know, so what you do when you bond, when cities and counties bond money for major infrastructure projects like that, you're locking in today's price for something you're going to use for the next 30 years. To me, that makes good sense. I think that's the way to do it, because 20 years from now, when I'm still driving on this road, you know, if you think about it, I'm paying the 20 year ago price. You know, it's kind of like, you know, if it would last, I mean, I would love to own a 1964 Mustang. That car today would cost me, I don't know, a good one, a nice, like one in showroom condition. It's probably going to cost me $60,000, $70,000, but it would have cost me $1,600 in 1964. So when was the right time to buy that? You know, your road's no different. The cost is only going to go up every single year to do that. But that's the same with your water infrastructure, your electrical, your roads, gas lines, you know, fiber optics, any of these things. The cost to build them is only going to increase. So when's the best time to do it? When you get to about 80, if you get to about, when you get to about 70% of capacity of whatever that infrastructure is, you need to start having that conversation immediately, you know, internally, as far as that government entity is concerned. And then you need to start having that conversation with your voter going, hey, we're going to get the engineering firm. We're going to look at this. We know this road needs, you know, everybody's got eyes. We know something needs to change. What's that going to cost? So go get those numbers together, get that in front of your voter and say, okay, guys, look, we can do it this year for $30 million. If we wait till next year, it's going to be 32. If we wait 5 years, we're talking about a $50 million project. What do you want to do? And, you know, take it to your voter and let them decide. You know, maybe the economy is bad. Now it's not the right time, you know, but, you know, maybe it is the right time. But let your voter decide that. They're smart. They're intelligent people. Don't go do CO bonds. That's kind of a sneaky way for, you know, for counties and cities to, you know, to commit the county, their government entity to debt without having to take it before the voter. Now, don't get me wrong. You get hit by a tornado and it knocks out your wastewater treatment plant. Well, yeah, we have to have that. There's no sense in voting on it. Go ahead and do it. But, you know, most things you need to go to the voter every single time with your big projects. I mean, that's how I've always felt about it. You know, I've been elected to run things as they are. But if we're going to expand, if we're going to go bigger with something, if we're going to try to account for that growth, that needs to get in front of the voter. So there's your long-winded example for what you got to worry about for the next 5 to 10 years. It's going to be infrastructure at the end of the day.
I like that answer. It's very upfront. And young college conservatives and Republicans are going to like that, because it's straight up. It's 100% forward, and I just think that they're gonna appreciate it. But how do you see Lubbock's role evolving within the larger state and national political landscape?
State-wise, it's a good slogan, and we need to start using it more. Lubbock leads the way as far as Lubbock County is concerned. You know, we've always been a hub of innovation, and not just to be a play on the hub city, but But, you know, one of the things that's unique about Lubbock is we are an urban county surrounded by rural counties. And, you know, what that means is typically, like, you have a lot of rural counties all out there together, and they're all very similar, and they all have a lot of the same problems, the same issues. They deal with the same things, you know, and they're all very similar. But then you start looking at your urban counties, they're all next to each other. So, you know, you've got Worth County, Dallas County. I mean, you start looking around there, and all those counties, they're all very similar, you know, same around Austin. They have very similar issues, similar problems. You know, I mean, if you start talking, if you're talking about Austin, if you're talking about San Antonio, all the counties that are around those, okay, where do we get enough? How are we going to get enough roads? Where are we going to get the water to do this? Why are these people coming? Where are all these people coming from? Do they all have jobs? Emergency management. Do I have enough shelters if this place gets wiped out by a flood? I mean, what am I going to do? You know, they're all dealing with these same issues. And then you have Lubbock. You have this urban county out in the middle of rural Texas. And, you know, for us, I mean, we don't have a sister city that can send over a dozen fire trucks, in, you know, in 30 minutes. You know, we need something. It's coming out of Amarillo. It's coming out of Midland. It's coming out of DFW. You know, we're kind of out here on our, all, you know, all by our lonesome. So, you know, now don't be wrong. I mean, our neighboring counties will help us. You know, Linn County, they're volunteer firemen. They'll run up here and help out. I've seen them come to Slayton to help out. And, you know, we'll do the same for them. But as far as having, you know, somebody that's on the same, you know, on the same scale that's right next door, we don't have that. So, you know, Lubbock County's done a really good job at this for a long time. We are extremely efficient when you look at the number of employees we have versus the number of people that live in Lubbock County. You know, like our county employee to, you know, to citizen ratio, I mean, we are very, very low. You know, we have very, very few employees per citizen. I mean, so this speaks to our efficiency already. So, like, when I say Lubbock leads the way, you know, we're looking at some very innovative things. You know, one of the things that I've been working on, you know, me and a friend of mine who's a programmer, putting together a road app. That way you guys can, and I would think your generation would appreciate this. You just download an app on your phone, you get a pothole, you see a pothole, you snap a picture of it. And, you know, it does three things for you. One, it gives me a date and timestamp. Two, it gives you a picture. And three, it gives you a geolocation. So you can just swipe that, send it straight in to whatever agency is responsible for that road, whether it's Lubbock County, city, whether it's TxDOT, whatever. And, you know, it'll report straight to them. And that way it gets into their system faster. And is this a new idea? Not exactly. You know, we're going to do it on a bigger scale. The city of Seattle did this in 2012. One of the things that they noticed right off the bat was that the potholes they were fixing, the first 2 years they were just dying. They were getting so many messages, you know, just could not keep up. And then after about year three rolled around, and they're like, man, this is really easy. We don't get very many phone calls, and when we do, they're small. But they were fixing the potholes when they're the size of a basketball and not the size of a Honda. So, you know, their cost started dropping. So, you know, now you didn't need a dump truck full of hot mix to fix a pothole. You know, you needed the little truck with the little pickup to go do it. So, you know, great tool and innovation. So, you know, we're working on something like that. AI, another thing Lubbock County does, freedom of information requests. You know, we get a lot of those. We get over, I think, what they tell me, it's like over 1,200 freedom of information requests last year, which when we get those, somebody has to go dig out the file. Somebody has to go look up the stuff and make sure, you know, that everything's correct. And then, you know, go through, do the redactions, you know, like, we don't want to put people's social security numbers out there, things like that. So it's very, very labor intensive. I had the DA's office tell me we've got 5 attorneys that do this on a rotation. I was like, oh, wow. Okay. Lubbock County attorney started $80,000 a year. So, you know, when you tell that to a penny pinching county commissioner like me, you know, all I hear is that you're tying up $400,000 to deal with this. So yeah, that's my concern right off the bat. Oh my God. Okay. We got to find another way. So, you know, here's one of the questions. Can we use some AI technology to be able to pull these records, go through there? Can we program in the FOIA request rules so it can automatically, you know, sift that data out for us? So, you know, what can we do on that? So that's another thing that we're looking at. The digital courts, another thing to be looking at too. You know, our JPs are doing this. One thing that we have to work with the state to make sure they don't take this away from us. But evictions, being able to do this online, truancy hearings, you know, these are all lower level, you know, matters to the court that tie up a lot of time. So how are we get those more efficient? You know, just today we approved a program for, juvenile offenders, rather than having to sit over here in juvie. You know, you got somebody that's low risk, low threat, but the kid did get in some trouble. So, you know, we got to keep an eye on him. You know, they got an app they can download on their cell phone, and, you know, they can report in that way, and it tracks them. You know, somebody's not responsible for enough for that. You know, the next step in that, we just approved this, is they have these ankle bracelets they're showing us today that do full tracking. The recharging system's really simple on those. You know, things like that. Lubbock right now, you know, like I said, Lubbock leads the way. Another thing we're innovating in is going to be mental health. We could do a whole podcast on what's causing the mental health crisis in America right now. You know, is it all the screens that we're looking at? I mean, if you're asking me, I think it's the poor food that we have, but that's just me. And from having a background in feeding animals, when I feed them junk, they don't tend to grow very well. So anyways, you know, we can have a very long discussion on that. But one of the things that Lubbock County is doing is going to be with our diversion centers. I mean, we've got people like you guys get on. Do you guys get on Lubbock mugshots?
Oh yeah.
That's fun. And y'all say that's fun. You probably see a few more of your friends that, you know, somebody did something dumb and, you know, got themselves on the internet. But anyways, I can remember reading the police blotter. That's how old I am. So anyways, when you look on there, and this is not to make fun of anybody or make light of a problem, but look at the people who get arrested for trespassing, for criminal trespass. One of the things you're going to notice, I mean, if their hair is like standing up and it's sticking out like nine ways, if you look on there and they've got like the guy's got like the Wolverine sideburns that come all the way down, like he's got it on one side but not the other. I mean, somebody's having a mental crisis. That's what that is. Somebody's homeless. A lot of your homeless are schizophrenic. This is something we're going to deal with, but we've got to get this under control. But one of the things from a county standpoint is it fills up our jails. But yeah, if you just want to get an idea on get up Saturday morning, scroll through all the people that got arrested Friday, see how many of them are in there for criminal trespassing. This is something we got to tackle, because right now the county jail is the most expensive way to get these people mental health treatment. I mean, we need to stop doing that. It just costs too much money. So StarCare is working with us. We're getting this diversion center put together. So what that's going to be is a police officer, then, I've done ride-alongs with some of our local law enforcement. And one of them I never forgot, it was a guy that was – he's a sheriff's deputy now. He was a former Lubbock cop that he told me about it was a woman that was schizophrenic, and he would see her out on the street he'd go by, see that – she's using drugs again. She's very skinny, looks very emaciated. He told me, he said, I used to just arrest her for public urination. And I was like, what? And he was like, yeah, nobody's going to question it. It's a $200 fine. But once they got her in there, they'd have to restore mental health on her, which means they had to get her. They had to get a counselor in front of her. They had to get her on some medication to help get her sorted out. He said, the real reason I was putting her in jail was because I just wanted to make sure that she had, she got three meals that day, and that she was sleeping indoors, and that she wasn't being abused or prostituted was another problem. So, that officer, I mean, from a moral standpoint, if you're asking me, did he do the right thing? Yeah, I'm not going to argue with him on that. That's for sure. But that's the most expensive way to try to get that woman some care. With a diversion center, what we can do there is officer picks somebody like that up. They don't have to charge them. They don't even have to arrest them. They can just drive them straight to the diversion center, pull up, open the door, let them out, say, hey, this is so-and-so. I think she's in mental crisis. And they would say, no problem. Come on in. Let's get you a sandwich. Let's get you a shower. Let's get you some clothes. And then let's talk about how we can get you, back to being a functioning member of society. Because right now, the way the social safety nets work, people don't exactly fall out the bottom. They fall into government. And it's very expensive to try to help these people, especially when you do it through a county jail. But what our diversion center is going to do is this is going to allow those people to, one, they can get – if they need health care, they can get it right there. If they need mental health care, they can get that there. But here's what happens. Let's say we're talking about a schizophrenic. Okay, that's great. You get them in. You get them fed. Now they're eating properly. Now some of these problems are going away. Now they're getting some mental health treatment. Now you're finding out, okay, this person is diagnosed schizophrenic. Okay, you're finding out that they don't have family, or their family has lost touch with them because, they ran off one day. Well, what happens? Well, you get them treated, you get them doing good, and then they get back out of jail, they get back out on the street, and the cycle begins again. Well, they're not taking their meds. Well, why are they not taking their meds? Well, they can't afford them. Okay, well, what's the other reason they're not taking them? Well, they don't have an address. So now, you know, they're sleeping behind the 7-Eleven again, waiting on them to throw out the hot dogs. So what StarCare is going to do is you have all those agencies that could help somebody like that in one place. So, you know, okay, well, we can get them food, we can get them fed, we can get them medicated, we can get them counseled. Okay, now let's talk about some housing situation here. Can we get them into a tiny home? Can we get them into some kind of a group living situation? And at the end of the day, people point to the costs of these programs. And you're right, it's not cheap. But it's cheaper to get them off of the merry-go-round than it is to let them just keep revolving through it. So, you know, now how much competency can you restore? I don't know. Some people, you may be able to get them back to where they're a functioning member of society again. Some people you may not be able to do that for, but you can get them off the street. You can get them to where, you know, we're not spending law enforcement dollars to have to constantly deal with them. You can get them where they're not breaking into places because they're cold at night. You know, you can improve their interaction with society. And it's less expensive to do it that way than it is to keep with the cycle. But sorry, got in, proud of that one. We got a little far into that. But the you know, so when I say Lubbock County leads the way, this is the kind of innovations that we're looking at. So I was at a conference down in Austin and had the county judge down there for Travis County going, hey, how are y'all doing this? How does this work? And so, yeah, we're having some conversations with those guys about things that we're doing in Lubbock, Texas. And these are the big counties. These are the big cities that are – you know, kind of looking around, trying to like, man, we got a problem. We got to figure something out. What does this look like? How can we do this? So, you know, that's where I say Lubbock leads the way. We're definitely getting our title back for leading the way in innovation. And that's one thing I'm glad to see and glad to be a part of.
That definitely is amazing to hear. Just hearing you talk about it is just astonishing to me, especially because it's going to help out a lot here in Lubbock with everybody on the east side.
Yeah, there's you took me back to 2024. We were having the health panels, and I had, because I'm heavily involved in patient access and healthcare and disability, veteran, et cetera, mm-hmm. affairs. And Dr. Cook and a host of other people, mm-hmm. they could not figure out a way. How do you triage healthcare, mental health care, rehab for people that are strung out and they need help, alcohol, et cetera? Well, mm-hmm. I created a way to do it. It was extensive. What I had wrote up would have made Lubbock money in the long run, and it would have solved a lot of these problems. And I'm saying that because I want to ask, you know, if Tech College Republicans and younger conservatives have ideas that we want to bring to our leaders, such as you or the mayor or David Brugel, for instance. Mm-hmm. How can they do that?
So one of the best ways to approach that, just contact any person in elected office that you think has something to do with that, and find out, you know, one, are you talking to the right guy? Because like I get a lot of phone calls. I never forgot this. I had a lady that called me about a pothole that was on a state road as near Slayton, is out in front of the Sonic, and I was like, hey, that's state. And she's like, well, so what? Figure it out. And I was like, okay. So I mean, first year in office, made some new contacts in state. So I've just kind of embraced that attitude, just figure it out. But a lot of times you got to figure out who is the right person to talk to is. So one, reaching out to, you know, your to people in your party to say, hey, I've got some ideas about this. You know, where do I need to get plugged in, you know, to try to do something? Like if you want to talk about the farm bill, I'd love to talk to you about it, but you're wasting your time. You need to go talk to Jody Arrington. You know, if you're wanting to talk about rural water access, you know, Charles Perry's your guy. You know, I'm happy to make the introduction, but I'm not the guy that you want to be having that conversation with, because, I mean, I'm about as empowered as you are to do something with it. So one is just getting in the right place. Your county your Lubbock County Republican Party chairman is a great person to go to with that, because they're probably going to know, you know, what direction to point you to. People that work in state reps offices, you know, are oftentimes like, I mean, if their guy's not the guy, they're very happy to get you, you know, on the phone with the actual person who can do something about that. So they're always a good access point as well, too. So one is making sure you're talking to the right person about it, and that's something that's in their wheelhouse to work on. The other thing is how you approach people, because don't get me wrong, everybody's got a great idea. And I've had a lot of great ideas that I found out didn't work worth a flip, and I was very disappointed. But I used to have an engineering manager at BHP Billiton that had a great way of approaching this. He would always come out and say, all right, this is the latest and greatest. This is our best bad idea from the ivory tower. So I always tell people, when you phrase something like that, when you got a great idea, put it out there and say, this is my best bad idea. And when I get a better bad idea, that's going to be the next one I'm going to try. And when you put it out there like that, a lot of times people are, they're willing to say, well, that would work, but you need to do X, Y, and Z. And that way you don't, it doesn't become your baby, because it might be an ugly baby and you may not be prepared to hear that. But, just put it out and say, hey, man, here's my best bad idea for this. Tell me why this won't work. And here's what's going to happen. Because the average person, everybody loves to shoot holes in things. You ever notice that? You're like, hey, you know what we could do? People are like, yeah, but we'd have to go out. Yeah, that's a lot of gas to get out of there. Yeah. It's easy to shoot holes in things. So when you come at somebody, go ahead and play on their natural interest, and just walk up there and say, hey, here's my best bad idea. Tell me why this won't work. And then get your pen out, because if you're talking to somebody in elected office, they're probably going to say, okay, well, here's why it won't work, because of X, Y, and Z. So then write those problems down and then go solve each one of those. Because, you might have a great idea, but it's a puzzle, and you've just got to get all the pieces together. So, when you bring that out to somebody, they're like, hey, that's not a corner, or that those pieces don't line up right. They're going to help you, poke a couple of holes in that idea that you need to go ahead and solve. And once you get those things solved, then you can go back and say, okay, here's my best bad idea. Tell me why this won't work. And when you're talking to somebody and they're like, well, I can't think of a reason why that won't work. Then they're like, oh, okay, cool. You want to try to do this? So, well, then they're like, well, yeah, I guess so. I can't think of why it won't work. Maybe we ought to do this. But it's a great way to take a good idea and really hone it into something that can become a practical plan. And then hopefully something that somebody will take action on.
That, it's amazing. And thank you for everything that you do. And thank you for joining us in this session. But before we leave, we always ask our guests, what advice do you want to give to young conservatives and young Republicans to open up and basically be open about being a Republican, being a conservative, and just showing up for your community?
Showing up for your community, just pick things that find something you want to change and work on it. That's the easiest way to do it. The number one thing you need to be working on is always be working on yourself, whether that's getting better at public speaking, whether that's working on, reading body language, just your posture. It's amazing how much that can change. What about maybe it's, how to present yourself? The way you walk up and talk to somebody my age is not the way you would talk to somebody who's 70 years old. It's not the way you would talk to somebody who's 20 years old. Just learning and understanding those things is always very helpful. But, always be working on yourself and making improvements in yourself. And that's going to make it easier for you to make improvements in the world around you. The other thing about talking to people about being conservative, I'll tell you this much right now. One thing I've learned in politics, fools talk about personalities. When somebody walks up to me and they say, I hate Donald Trump, I'm done talking to you and I'm done listening to anything you have to say. But if you walk up and tell me, I hate Joe Biden, I really don't care to hear what you have to say at that point, because it tells me you're not smart enough to have the conversation. But when you can walk up to somebody and you say, I disagree with Donald Trump's policy on X, Y, and Z. Really? Okay. Now we can have a conversation. When you're saying, I disagree with the Biden policy of giving money to Iran because of X, Y, and Z, or is what I'm watching on the news right now. Smart people can discuss issues. Okay. Stupid people argue over personalities. Much to the chagrin of what our media tries to portray this as, and I don't care if it's Fox News or CNN, MSNBC, they're all equally bad about this. they want to make it about the personalities. They act like politics. They act like this is WWE wrestling. I mean, you know, that's not what this is. This is making determinations about the future of our, you know, our schools, our communities, our states, our nation. And, you know, to point out that, you know, Donald Trump, I forget which sheik it was that said that when he went to the Middle East, it said, "You are the president of the world." That is the most accurate statement I've heard about Donald Trump in a long time, or really any U.S. president. But when you have people who, you know, when you have people who want to discuss personalities, they're not smart enough to have the conversation. So how do you bring these things up? You always talk about the issues. You know, there's no sense. If I tell you somebody, the candidate you like is dumb, I'm not going to change your mind about anything. But if I tell you I disagree with fiscal policy on something, or I'm not crazy about the social policy, or I don't think that this will work. You know, when you talk about issues, you demonstrate higher intelligence, or that you're intelligent enough to understand it. The other thing too, you're more likely to change somebody's mind by talking about an issue than you are to change their mind by talking about a personality. So, you know, they may have already decided they like this person. You know, it's kind of like, man, you're never going to go out and convince somebody that they don't like their own kid. Okay. But you might be able to convince them that, you know, their kid's practice of beating up other kids is not really nice and probably not productive. You can convince people to change their ideas on issues. You're not going to change their mind on personality. So don't even have that conversation. But, you know, if you're trying to, you know, if you get into the, you know, apologetics of conservatism, that's, you know, definitely a, definitely the thing to keep in mind is talk to people about issues. Don't talk about people, because now we're just name calling. Now we're back to high school. You know, now we're reducing politics and the running of a nation, you know, or a county or whatever it is that you're trying to work on, you know, down to, you know, some, I don't know, low rent wrestling, you know, federation. And, you know, that's not productive. But yeah, that's all I tell you about that one. And yes, just in closing, you know, I always give everybody my cell phone number, try to be as accessible as possible. So anybody that wants that number, it's 806-577-9778. So yeah, feel free to give me a call about any issues. If you have any trouble in Lubbock County, you know, give me a call. If you're having trouble with the state or the feds or whatever, just call your county commissioner. Either I know the answer, or I probably know somebody who does through one acquaintance or another. But once again, my phone number is 806-577-9778, and that's Jason Corley, Lubbock County Commissioner for Precinct 2.
Thank you once again for joining us, Commissioner Corley, and giving us some of your time. I know the students of Texas Tech appreciate it, and our listeners across West Texas appreciate it.
We definitely appreciate it.
Yep, thank you guys for having me on.
And thank you all for riding right with the Raiders. As always, God bless America and God bless Texas.
Guns up, Red Raiders. Thanks for listening to the Riding Right with the Raiders. If you liked what you heard, give us a follow, share it with your friends, and join the conversation. Email us at ridingrightwiththeraiders@outlook.com.
Be sure to follow our social medias on Instagram. As always, let's keep standing for faith, freedom, and the Red Raider way. God bless, and we'll see you next week.